This is the Morrow Midday Show.
But wait, there's more.
On ESPN Radio.
Yes, it's back again. Shady's back. Tell a friend. Guess who's back.
Final hour of the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. If you ever miss anything from the show, catch on demand. Just search ESPN Radio Charleston, however you listen to your podcast. You can always get in touch with the show online at charlestonsportsradio.com. Click on our show page, and there you can leave a comment for the show. Get to us on Twitter at Morrow Middays. You can always text the show, 843-608-1734. Or you could join the conversation on the phones, 843-721-9500. We'll get to the NBA Finals in just a few moments. On the text line, somebody asked, could Charlotte be a Super Bowl city if David Tepper builds a new stadium, which he wants? I think if any city builds a new stadium, you get a Super Bowl. That's how it's gone. They even put a Super Bowl in Minnesota when they opened their new stadium. Now, of course, it's a dome. It's indoors, but it's a tough climate for Super Bowl week with all the events they have going on. When they built New Giant Stadium, right, they had a Super Bowl out there. And you usually don't get Super Bowls in New Jersey. So, yeah, if the Panthers were to build a new stadium, they would get a Super Bowl within the first probably 5 years. I mean, we've had the Super Bowls go out to L.A. in the new stadium. If you build a new stadium, you're going to get a Super Bowl. That's how it works within probably the first 5 years. So, if Tepper builds a new stadium, eventually, they will probably get a Super Bowl. Now, Charlotte may not be as great of like an area or even as big of an area to hold the Super Bowl as the New York, New Jersey region or going out to California. But typically, if it's not big enough, maybe you shouldn't have an NFL team there then, right? And if you get a new stadium, you usually get a Super Bowl. By the way, speaking of David Tepper, more negative headlines for him where he filed bankruptcy. He put his real estate holding company into Chapter 11 over that training camp meltdown in upstate South Carolina. And look, I'm not some sort of savvy businessman here. I'm no LeBron James billionaire. So I don't understand all the processes of all this. It's just a bad look, the headline, when you have the richest owner in football, you know, filing bankruptcy and trying to put it on the state of the South Carolina or the people of, was it York County, wherever it is, Rock Hill. So not really a great look. People are upset with David Tepper. I think that's going to become an ugly situation. And it's interesting that we talked about this earlier this week, but every area outside of Matt Rhule, he has seemed to be pretty impulsive. Pulled the plug on that whole development in Rock Hill, fired his soccer coach after 14 games of year one. His president or CEO of his sports company, right, was gone after about 5 weeks. And yet when it comes to Matt Rhule, it seems like a much longer leash and originally was given a 7-year contract. But those are the concerns, kind of like a George Steinbrenner. I've compared Tepper to a Steinbrenner before, right? When you get these really rich guys that take over teams, they can be impulsive, and maybe they come from the business world where things are being operated a little bit differently and they just don't have the patience. And they're going to make these rash decisions. And Tepper's been making some rash decisions, except when it comes to his, you know, I mean, they fired Joe Brady middle of last season. But for David Tepper, we'll see how hot that seat may get, especially this year, if things don't start off well. And we'll see how the whole situation plays out with David Tepper against Rock Hill. But if he gets a new stadium in Charlotte, yeah, I imagine they would get a Super Bowl within a couple of years as well. Which, of course, would be a real thrill for even the people of this area. Not too far of a trip. Right, because that's the big thing. If you ever try to go to a Super Bowl, you've never been, it's on the bucket list. Part of the expense, of course, is the travel and the hotel, all that stuff. So if a Super Bowl was not too far, you could drive, you don't have to fly, you don't have to get a hotel. All you have to worry about is just the price of a ticket, which is still very expensive, but it makes it a lot cheaper to try to go to a Super Bowl than if you were trying to go out to L.A. to the Super Bowl. because the hotels are crazy expensive that week and flights are ridiculous, especially now with the increase of oil. And so if you get a Super Bowl in your backyard, that's the time you got to go, because all you have to worry about are tickets and the drive. Anyways. Hey, yesterday was June 1st. We're into June. It's hard to believe, huh? We're already into the summer. Apparently, this is very surprising. Here's a bunch of people, before we get into the NBA Finals, a bunch of people on local newscasts that found it very surprising to wake up yesterday and see it was June 1st.
It is June 1st.
Cannot believe it, can you?
You believe it is June 1st already?
Hard to believe it's June already, right?
Hard to believe June 1st is already here.
Hard to believe today is June 1st.
I can't believe it's already June.
Can you believe it's June 1st already?
It's hard to believe it's June 1st.
Hard to believe it's June 1st.
I can't believe it's June.
I know, June 1st.
I cannot believe it's June 1st.
Cannot believe that it's already June 1st.
Hard to believe it's June already.
It's June.
It is June.
Can you believe it's June already?
No, it's unbelievable.
Can you believe it?
May went by quickly. It really did.
Holy cow. Everyone, we're going to Pat Doak here on this Wednesday afternoon. Wednesday, June the 1st. May flew by.
Sure did. May did fly by. Can you believe it? We're already at June 1st. A lot of people out there can't believe it. June 1st.
It was surprising yesterday when we got on Fan Talk. We realized it was June 1st.
Yeah, how about that?
Big day.
After May comes June 1st. It's hard to believe. When we get to that date, a lot of people, a lot of local newscasts opening up with the surprise of June 1st, and maybe a radio show as well, which reminded me, hearing all those clips reminded me of Mike Francesa. Now, I'm probably guilty of this, too. There's certain things that we, they're just cliches. We say it all the time, kind of like, wow, can you believe it's June 1st? We all do that. Same with the NFL season. Like, wow, can you believe we're already in week 8? The season goes so fast. So it reminded me of this clip from Mike Francesa spliced together. He was a classic radio host in New York City. This was from a couple of years ago when every week of the football season, he would be so surprised we were another week further into the football season.
Already hit week 2 here. It goes very fast. Before you know it, we'll be down the line. We'll be talking about week 5 and week 8 and week 10. It's amazing how fast this league goes. Week 5. Amazingly, goes flying along. We're in the month of October in the league where we play for pay. Week 6 already, so fast. Week 7 already, believe it or not. Already, believe it or not, week 8 as we say goodbye to October. For week of believe it or not, number 9 as we make the transition. Week 10 already. It's amazing, huh? You say it every year. You get back after, you know, you take off the end of the summer like everybody does. You get back for Labor Day, and you say how fast it goes. It goes so fast. I mean, it's already Thanksgiving next week. It's crazy.
It's amazing. After Monday comes Tuesday, and then would you believe after Tuesday it's Wednesday? And then Thursday. But then wait a minute. Hold on. After Thursday, oh, my gosh, it's Friday. And then you get to Saturday and Sunday, and that, oh, wow, that's called a week. And then a week later, can you believe, it's amazing. We've already gone another week of this football season. And then, oh, here comes Tuesday again, and oh, my goodness, it's already week 4. That's how a calendar works. But I think I'm guilty of it as well. All right, we always say, all right, the football season goes, so it's hard to believe it's already week 15. I don't know, that's just how the calendar works. That's how life goes. 7 days in a week, usually 4 weeks in a month. And then you move forward. Football, you play a week after week, and before you know it, the season's over. After May comes June, but it's a surprise. You look at that calendar. It's June 1st. The summer has arrived. Hey, the NBA Finals have arrived as well. They tip off tonight. Now, I think the Golden State Warriors win the series. I think they win in 6 games. And I gave you my reasons why earlier, but I have 5 of them. Number 1 is experience. The Warriors have a combined 123 games of finals experience. The Celtics have 0. It is the third time we have had a gap that wide. In fact, this is the largest separation since 97 in the NBA Finals. Not often do you have a team with this much experience, 6 NBA Finals for some of these guys, against a team that has never had somebody play in one of these games. And additionally, when you look at the coaches, same idea. Steve Kerr has coached now in 6 of these. Ime Udoka has done a great job this year, but he's never coached an NBA Finals game. And when you look at the Golden State Warriors, they've been so good in third quarters. They come out of the locker room with great adjustments, and they put teams away right to start the second half. And so that would be my concern. Look for that in this series. That coaching matchup or maybe mismatch. How will the Celtics do in those third quarters? Because the Warriors have been lights out. They typically win the third quarter. And that's usually the difference in the game. See, this is the interesting thing about this matchup. A lot of times the Warriors may only win the third quarter, but that's enough to win the game. And the Celtics may win three out of four quarters and lose the game. It's what everybody was clamoring about in that Heat series. Right? Oh, the Heat are fraudulent. They've only won three quarters, and yet they still had a series lead. Because against the Celtics, that could be all it takes. Which takes me to point number two, the ability or inability to close out games. The Celtics may outplay you over the course of the game, but they won't outplay you at the end of the game, and it costs them a game. A lot of these games are close, right? Especially in the playoffs. I mean, I know this year we've had blowouts, but theoretically, in the playoffs, you get the two best teams in basketball in the NBA Finals. They should be close games. And the Celtics this year were 29th in clutchness, which is a metric we won't get bogged down into how they determine that. When it comes to clutch moments in games, the Celtics were the second worst team. The Warriors are number one amongst playoff teams this year. That's a huge difference. Final 5 minutes of a game, right? The Warriors know how to close out these games. The Celtics, meanwhile, find ways to lose. Marcus Smart is shooting 15% in the final 5 minutes of games, just to give you an example. The Celtics find ways to lose, such as Game 6 against the Heat. Chance to close out the series on your floor, go to the finals, couldn't do it. This is a concern for me, that as you watch these games in this NBA Finals, over the course of, let's say it goes six games, over the course of those 24 quarters, the Celtics may win more quarters, but fewer games. The Celtics may outplay the Warriors for three or four quarters in a game and still lose. And it's hard to win a series that way, when you have to be, in that case, right, so precise and almost perfect. Which takes me to reason number three, the inconsistency of the Celtics. In that Game 6 loss against the Heat, Jason Tatum took one shot in the fourth quarter. The Celtics have been too inconsistent. Their star has been too inconsistent. I get more consistency with Golden State. The Celtics, I don't have to worry about the defense. They're consistent on defense. All five starters got a vote for Defensive Player of the Year. They can run out different lineups out there. They'll all play hard defense. They were the number one defensive team in the league this year. I'm more concerned about the offense. Jason Tatum, right, 24 years old, has been too inconsistent. Now he's playing in his first finals. Can you count on him? What about the supporting cast? Where for Golden State, there's always somebody stepping up. Even if it's not Steph Curry, it's going to be somebody. You feel pretty good about that. Maybe tonight it'll be Poole. Maybe it's Wiggins. Maybe it's Clay. Maybe it's Curry. They got all sorts of options that can all at least pose as a number one threat. The number four reason why I like Golden State in the series is home court advantage. Not only do they have home court advantage, so they'll play four of the seven games if it goes that far at home. But Golden State has won 11 straight games at home, 9-0 in the playoffs at home. Meanwhile, the Celtics, the last two rounds, 3-4 at home. Not great. Speaking of the last couple of rounds, the number five reason why I like Golden State in this series is because they have had the easier path. Usually this could be a concern when we always say that, right? They haven't played anybody. You can't trust them in the championship. Who have they beaten this year? Or who have they beaten this postseason? They had a cakewalk. Usually it can be a concern. But when it comes to the Warriors, we don't need to be worried about their lack of tests. This team has been here many times before. So I'm not concerned about Golden State if they had an easier path in the playoffs. Instead, I look at it as a positive. Right? More rest instead of a greater test. They're more rested than Boston. They haven't played in a week. They've played fewer playoff games. The Celtics played 13 games in 23 days, and they had to go to Game 7 against the Bucks, Game 7 against the Heat. Teams that have had to go to two Game 7s before the NBA Finals have gone 2-10 all-time in the NBA Finals. The Warriors have only let one series go even more than five games. Right, it's already been a long season, and the Celtics have had to work even harder in the playoffs at the end of that long season. So for all of those reasons, I think the Warriors win in six games. Because of experience, coaching, they're more clutch, they're more consistent, they're more rested, they're older, they've been here before, they have home court advantage, they have a lot of advantages in this series. When it comes to tonight, game one, I think the Warriors win tonight, game one. I would probably take them to cover. I feel much better about just winning outright. But there's a metric that when you look at the money, if there's more money than bets on a certain team, they usually cover the spread as well. I'm not going to nerd out with you and break it all down, but the point being, data suggests that the Warriors should also cover tonight because of where the money is, if you're an analytical nerd or even just a gambling nerd. I think the Warriors win tonight. The metrics would suggest they should cover as well, so you could take them there. But I think the Celtics may win the first half, or at least cover. I think it's like 1.5 for the first half. So I may take the Celtics in the first half. The Warriors will win the third quarter. They always do. And then the Warriors will take over the game and end up winning by the end of the game. I could see the Celtics coming out. Look, the Warriors have had a longer layoff. The Celtics are here for the first time. They could be jazzed up. They may come out with a little more energy early on, may jump out to an early lead. Could be an interesting game at halftime. Then I think the Warriors come out in the third quarter. They make their adjustments as they always do. They build a lead. They kind of pull away. I think they win tonight. Wouldn't be surprised if they cover. And then game two this weekend becomes very interesting. Because if you're the Celtics, you just have to split on the road. And the Celtics have not lost back-to-back games all postseason. And they've been better on the road than they have been at home. And they've lost back-to-back games just once the last 4 months. So if they lose tonight, and I think they will they lose back-to-back games for the first time in a while? Or will they bounce back in game two? Jason Tatum has been much better after losses than actually in losses. I could see where the Celtics win game two. I think the Warriors win tonight. I would probably pick the Celtics to win game two because they just don't lose back-to-back games. And if they do that, hey, they'll accomplish their job. Just go out to San Fran and split these games and go back to Boston tied at one. I still think the Warriors win the series in six because I think they're the better team. I think they win tonight, probably cover the 3.5, and then I wouldn't be surprised if the Celtics come back and win game two on Sunday. This is the only time in which you have that rest advantage. The rest of the way, they'll be on the same rest. Steve Kerr is 21-2 when he has a rest advantage against his opponent, as the Warriors do tonight. So I think they win tonight, and then you go to Sunday, both teams, same amount of rest. You make some adjustments from game one. The Celtics don't lose back-to-back games. The Celtics make good adjustments game to game. The Warriors make good adjustments within a game. And that's why I think Golden State comes out in the second half tonight and wins, and then maybe the Celtics come back and win game two, and we have quite the series heading back to Boston. But in the end, I think the Warriors win it in six. We'll talk about this series in about 15 minutes with Ben Golliver, who covers the NBA and has been on the show before for the Washington Post. But when we come back, it is a throwback Thursday. Let's look back at some of the best NBA finals we've had over the years. Maybe this one will match up over the next couple of weeks. It's the More Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers, lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
It's a throwback Thursday. What have been the best NBA finals we've had over the last couple of decades? We'll get to that on the Morrow Midday Show at Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. On the text line, somebody said David Tepper paid a judge $20 million, said Rock Hill can handle it, filed for bankruptcy so he could not get sued, still owns the land, but wants to leave it and Rock Hill handle it. Yeah, we'll see what happens to that whole situation. I'm sure it could get a little ugly between those two sides, as we were talking about David Tepper earlier this hour. Hey, NBA Finals begin tonight. We'll talk about it with Ben Golliver in about 10 minutes. But when you think back to the best NBA Finals we've had over the years here on a Throwback Thursday, I'm considering just the last 30 years. We could talk about Willis Reed and the Knicks. You could talk about all the Celtics and Lakers matchups of the 80s. Or when Magic Johnson had to step in and play center against the Sixers in 1980 and went for 42 points and 15 rebounds. But if we focus on just from, let's say, 1990 on, just over 30 years, right, when the Jordan Bulls era began. Five best finals we've had over that time. Number five, I would say Celtics-Lakers in 2008. The Celtics beat the Lakers in six games, but four of the six games of the series were decided by single digits. And you had the history, the tradition, the nostalgia, the brands of the Celtics and the Lakers for the first time since the 80s. You didn't have Magic or Bird, but instead you had Kobe in his first NBA Finals without Shaq, and you had really the first super team that we had, or the first big three we had in Boston with Garnett, Ray Allen, and Paul Pierce. And, of course, you also had the Paul Pierce, the wheelchair incident. Who knows what truly happened? Maybe he had to just get to the bathroom. But in game one of that series, right, he comes back out on the wheelchair. Everybody loves it. And eventually the Celtics go on to win in six games. The Lakers blew a 24-point lead at home at one point, which was the biggest blown lead in NBA Finals history. That's number five. Number four, I would say Rockets and the Knicks in 94. This was the first year without Michael Jordan. The Bulls always held the Knicks back in the 90s. The Knicks finally get to the finals, and in Jordan's absence, you had Hakeem and the Rockets win back-to-back. So you could also make the argument that Jordan was holding back the Rockets. Who knows what Olajuwon could have accomplished throughout the 90s without Jordan and the Bulls. This was a classic, right? This was old-school basketball compared to today. 1994 and the Knicks and the way they would play, it was physical. It was a bit of a rock fight. You had Ewing against Olajuwon. Every game was a single-digit game. It went seven games. Houston won two of the games by one possession. And then you just had Olajuwon against Ewing. You had John Starks. You had Clyde Drexler. And don't forget, during this series, this was the series in which we had the O.J. Simpson chase. So much so that you get that on the screen during the NBA Finals. You cut away from the NBA Finals to watch O.J. racing down the highway in a Bronco. And then John Starks, Knicks fans could never forget. John Starks played so terribly in Game 7, couldn't throw it in the ocean, and the Rockets beat the Knicks in what was really the Knicks' their best opportunity to win a championship in the last 50 years. Number three, you go Heat Spurs in 2013, mostly because of Ray Allen. One of the greatest shots, maybe the greatest shot in finals history, hits that corner three in Game 6. Game goes to overtime. The Heat, instead of losing the series, end up coming back to win. And you have the big three in Miami going up against one of the better, if you want to call them dynasties or just organizations in basketball the last 20 years in San Antonio. You have Tim Duncan, right? You have a lot of future Hall of Famers on the floor. Let's just say that. And you have Ray Allen hitting that huge shot, and then in Game 7, LeBron goes for 37, and Miami wins back-to-back. It was quite the series. Of course, anytime it goes seven games and you get a big shot like that, it'll be quite the memorable series. Number two of the best NBA Finals last 30 years, I'll go the Bulls' final one. I believe it was the most, at least at the time, maybe it still is, most watched NBA Finals. 1998, Jordan and the Bulls against the Jazz. It went six games, right? So not a seven-game series, but you had Jordan in his final finals. You had the Jazz. It was the matchup back-to-back years, Bulls against the Jazz for the second straight year. You had Stockton and Malone and Jerry Sloan on one side and Hornacek and Byron Russell and Greg Ostertag, friend of the show. Right, you had a lot of talent. That was a good Jazz team. And then, of course, you had the Bulls trying to finish off their second straight three-peat, which they would. And to add on, you know, the cherry on top, of course, it ends with the pull-up jumper from Jordan after pushing Byron Russell away, hits the foul line jumper, and that image of him holding the follow-through as he hits the game-winning shot to win the series and, you know, the lasting image of his Bulls career. We didn't know that he'd come back and play for the Wizards 2 years later, but it seemed like the ultimate go-out-on-top moment against the Jazz, beating them in back-to-back years. It was a fun series. The Jazz were a good team, even though they could never win the championship. And the Bulls, for the second time in the 90s, won their third straight. I put that at number two. But number one, I'll say Cavs-Warriors in 2016, of the best finals over the last 30 years. Because you had a 73-win team in the Warriors that set the record for the most wins. They get to the finals against the Cavs, and you have LeBron on the other side, you know, carrying Cleveland and bringing Cleveland their first championship, and the Warriors go up 3-1. And, you know, as they say, we know the rest is history. Draymond Green gets suspended for Game 5. That was huge. It's forgotten, but Andrew Bogut gets injured, misses a couple of games. That was huge. LeBron James goes off for huge performances, scored 41 points in Game 5, 41 points again in Game 6, made that huge play in Game 7 on the chase down block in the final 2 minutes. And then even though Kyrie Irving made the biggest shot of the series, still LeBron was played very well, and they completed a historic comeback, first championship for that city since 1964. LeBron gets his third ring. He's the finals MVP, even though Kyrie had the biggest shot of the series. And the Cavs come back down 3-1. To stun the Warriors, therefore leading to Kevin Durant going there, because it seemed like even though they won 73 games, they still didn't have enough in Golden State. And now we get Golden State in the finals tonight against the Celtics, game one of this series. I don't know if this will make a top five list years from now, but I do think we could get a really interesting, exciting series. I certainly hope so. If it's been a series or it's been a postseason of blowouts, I hope we get some intriguing games starting tonight. I think the Warriors win tonight, and they win the series in six, but it should be a fun NBA Finals. When we come back, we'll talk about it with Ben Golliver, who covers the NBA. It's the More Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers, lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. As we get ready for the NBA Finals beginning tonight with the Celtics and the Warriors, Game 1. And joining us now to help break down this series is Ben Golliver, who covers the NBA for the Washington Post. He's with us now. Ben, good afternoon. How are you?
I'm doing great, man, here in San Francisco, ready to go for tonight.
Yeah, I can imagine so. I don't know if it was the last time we talked with you, but I remember we talked to you when you were still doing laps in your hotel room in the bubble 2 years ago. So I can imagine as you get ready for Game 1 tonight, and obviously it's not the first final since the bubble, but I'm sure this is a bit of a different experience getting ready for this series than 2 years ago.
Well, I'm looking out my hotel room window right now at the San Francisco Bay. Some beautiful sailboats out there. It's sunny weather, not too many clouds in the sky. And the nice part is I'm allowed to go outside. It's not like a 10-day quarantine where they don't ever let you out. So we have freedom of movement back. We've got fans back in the building. It's going to be really rowdy at Chase Center. I think it's a big advantage for Golden State. They're 9-0 at home in these playoffs. Nobody's been able to beat them here in their new San Francisco arena. And this is actually the first year they've ever hosted the finals in San Francisco. Previously, they were in Oakland. So there's going to be a lot of excitement in that building tonight.
Yeah, I can imagine. So let me start with that then, since you mentioned that. You know, the Celtics haven't lost back-to-back games. The Warriors haven't lost at home in the playoffs, so maybe something has to give here. Just looking at these first two games, not even the whole series, but tonight, Sunday, how do you see things starting in Golden State? Can the Celtics get one of these on the road to begin this series against the Warriors?
Well, I think it's a classic rest versus rust, right? I mean, Golden State and Boston both have been playing every other day throughout the conference finals. That really helps you build up a rhythm. But if you've got guys who are injured, sometimes maybe they're not 100% when they're going out there and playing. Both teams have had significant time off, but Golden State's actually had, I think, 3 days more. They've been off for basically a week since they took care of Dallas in the Western Conference Finals. So do they come out a little bit flat, or do they come out ready to go, all kind of hyped up after that time off? That's what I'm going to be looking for, I think, early in Game 1. I think besides that, you want to see how does Robert Williams move for the Boston Celtics. He's been dealing with a knee injury, playing through pain, as Ime Udoka said, throughout the Eastern Conference Finals. This is the first time he's really had an extended stretch to rest it, and he's really key for their defense in terms of their matchups and also their rebounding and athleticism. So you want to watch him on the Boston side. Is he looking a little bit more normal? Is he able to play big minutes in Game 1? I think those are some of the X factors you want to watch early in this series.
Yeah, so you said rest versus rust. I've also said this afternoon, even just rest versus test, where the Celtics have certainly been battle-tested here this postseason. And I've seen people pick the Celtics because, look, they've won some Game 7s, they've won some big games on the road, but they've had to play more games than the Warriors. They had to play more recently. And teams that have had to play multiple Game 7s are 2-10 in the NBA Finals. So my question, Ben, would be, for this series, what the Celtics have done winning Game 7s and winning the long series have been impressive, but is that something that you should be concerned about, maybe catching up to the Celtics after, you know, a lengthy, even after that first round, a bit of a lengthy postseason for them?
Well, I'll say this. I was very impressed by their ability to come back out of a 3-2 hole against Milwaukee. They showed a lot of resolve in that series, and I thought that was a really impressive, passing a test, as you're calling it. I thought they should have taken care of the Miami Heat much quicker than 7 games. I mean, they had a talent advantage, depth advantage, health advantage. They really should not have had that series go all the way to 7. To me, I mean, it could have even been 5 if their offense had shown up in a couple of those losses. So, to me, I'm not giving them full credit just because they were able to hang on and win Game 7 against Miami. I thought they should have handled their business earlier. You look at Golden State, though, I mean, it was pretty quick work going through that Western Conference. They faced some really good players. I mean, the MVP, Nikola Jokic, Ja Morant, and the Grizzlies in the second round, and then Luka Doncic, who pretty much single-handedly took down the Phoenix Suns all by himself. And Golden State made relatively quick work of those guys. It put them in a position where they're the older team. They're the team that has core guys who are 30-plus years old in Steph Curry, Draymond Green and Klay Thompson, you know, they were calling themselves yesterday the old heads and kind of marveling how it's a complete role reversal from 2015 when they were the young guys on the block trying to knock off some of the older teams in the playoffs. And they've come full circle here, the Golden State Warriors have had. And I think it favors them, honestly, especially if this becomes a long series. Steve Kerr tends to go deeper into his bench. I think he actually has a better second unit than Boston does. And if you combine all the wear and tear of those extra games, plus having, you know, really a seven-man rotation is what Ime Udoka is using. If this series goes to Game 6 or Game 7, I think Golden State's going to be the fresher team.
Yeah, you mentioned the coaches. You know, Ime obviously has done a great job this year in his first year at the Celtics and getting them to this point. But Steve Kerr, of course, has been here before. He's won championships. It's his sixth NBA Finals. When it comes to the coaching matchup of this series, do you think that Ime, you know, can match up with Steve Kerr this series? Do you see any sort of mismatch there?
I cannot remember a rookie coach who's hit the ground running better than Ime Udoka since Steve Kerr in 2015. Don't forget, it was Kerr who won a title in his first year as Golden State Warriors coach, right? He came in, transformed the entire organization. The offense took off. Steph Curry became this record-setting three-point shooter. And next thing you know, Golden State launches this dynasty. I'm not saying the Celtics are set up for a similar seven-year dynasty, but Ime Udoka has been so impressive, just totally nailed in these high-pressure moments. And he's going to have his group ready. To me, the biggest adjustment they're going to have to make, they've played a number of teams where on offense, everything that the opposing team is doing is really surrounding one or two players. You know, you look at Giannis in the second round, you know, he's scoring 40-plus points for Milwaukee. You look at Jimmy Butler, really a big-time scorer for the Miami Heat. And even in the first round against Brooklyn, it was just kind of the KD and Kyrie show. That's not exactly how Golden State's offense works. And they can score from all five spots. They move the ball well. They move off the ball well. Their system is just really, really tough to kind of get adjusted to. And I think going from this Miami Heat offense, which was really lagging, this are kind of a slow and choppy and ugly games, to this faster-paced Golden State attack, that's going to be the biggest adjustment that Ime Udoka's got to have his guys ready for. It's going to be totally different stylistically, and you're going to have to be really precise in your defensive rotations. You're going to have to get out to all those guys like the Andrew Wiggins and the Jordan Pools. All those guys are shooters. They don't have any weak links in their offense, sort of like Miami and Milwaukee had in the previous series.
Talking with Ben Golliver about the NBA Finals, which begins tonight. You know, when you look at the Celtics, I know the stat was, I don't really know how it's determined, but in terms of clutchness, the Celtics were the second worst this year in clutch moments. We saw them let a couple of games slip away, certainly against the Heat in Game 6. What have you seen from Boston where in some tight situations late in games, you know, they've maybe struggled to put games away because obviously you can't afford to try to do that and win a series against the Warriors. What have you seen from Boston in some of these end-of-game situations?
Well, I'll tell you what, I haven't seen much because every time they get in a clutch situation, I want to close my eyes. I mean, it's an absolute disaster. You saw it at the end of Game 7, right? I mean, they're just throwing up all these bricks. They're blowing this gigantic lead. Miami's coming rushing back, and they just barely dodged the bullet from Jimmy Butler, you know, that three-pointer that potentially could have won that game for Miami. I mean, that boiled down all of Boston's clutch problems into a nutshell. Look, Marcus Smart has done a good job as a point guard this season, kind of a stand-in point guard for the Boston Celtics, but he's not that natural game-controlling type guy. Like, he's not a Chris Paul type where, you know, everything is kind of under his thumb and, you know, he's orchestrating. The problem that they face in those late-game situations is their lead playmakers are wings and they're guys who really aren't the best at setting up their teammates in Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. Now, Tatum's made a little bit progress as a passer, but he's still just not like an elite-level passer in those spots. And so I think the ball movement gets a little bit weird. Their shot selection winds up not being as good. They often get late into the shot clock, and so they're just kind of throwing up heaves and crazy shots. And then, of course, occasionally they run into some turnover issues as well. And so all of those things come back to bite them in late-game moments. And you kind of go the other way. Golden State, I was really impressed when they got into, you know, fourth-quarter games in this playoffs, especially against, like, Memphis, but also against Dallas. They were really able to slam the door, you know, in those kinds of moments. And that's where the experience factor comes in. That's where all those games against the LeBron Jameses of the world, you know, from the finals past really come back to help you. And so when I'm kind of trying to handicap this series, I think that's one of the biggest differentiation points between these two teams, just their comfort in close games. And that's why I'm going to take the Warriors in this series.
Warriors in this series, how many games do you think it goes? How long do you think it takes for the Warriors to close it out?
You know, I think it's going to be six. I wouldn't be surprised if it was seven, honestly. I mean, these are two really good teams, very high-level defenses, and you've got some superstar talent on both sides. You know, Tatum's really coming to his own in this postseason. I'm expecting actually huge ratings for this series as well. You've got Golden State, where I think everybody has, you know, come to find out across the country what a fun team they are to watch. And then the Boston Celtics, just that classic NBA organization that people either love to love or love to hate. And I think you put those two teams together, you're going to have a lot of eyeballs in this game tonight.
Yeah, I agree with you there. I think it should be a fun series. Two things before we let you go. Talk with Ben Gallagher from the Washington Post. Steph Curry, a lot has been made here over the past week about Curry, you know, getting a fourth ring, finally maybe getting that MVP. How impactful, how important do you think this series could be, if at all, for Steph Curry and maybe his legacy or how we look at him?
Well, look, if they win the title, he wins the divorce with Kevin Durant, right? Isn't it just that simple? I mean, if he has a title before KD shows up, two with KD, and then a title after KD, that elevates him over Kevin Durant in these kind of all-time conversations. That just says, look, we didn't need you to win those rings, and potentially it would set him up to get his first finals MVP this year as well, which is something he's been trying to, you know, check off his personal bucket list. So I think from a reputational standpoint, nobody has more to gain than Stephen Curry in this upcoming series. He's been playing great basketball in this playoffs. You know, we haven't seen the crazy, you know, 50-point explosion because teams throw so much defensive attention at him. But he does a great job of picking his spots offensively while also keeping his teammates involved. They have the number one playoff offense right now, and it's because everybody's contributing. You know, you're seeing Andrew Wiggins step up. You're seeing Klay Thompson have some big games, and Draymond also helping facilitate their offense as well. So I think this is a big one for Steph Curry. I think he gets it. And don't forget, they've had two really tough seasons coming into this year where they didn't even make the playoffs. And one of the years, they had the worst record in the entire NBA. So for them, this has got to be really satisfying. Knowing you got back to the mountain when, you know, probably 2 years ago, it probably seemed like a long shot you're ever going to get here.
Last thing, and I know you're locked in on the finals. You're out there. You're going to be covering it. We're all waiting for the NBA Finals to begin tonight. But let me throw a little bit of a curve at you. Zion Williamson. A lot has been made about Zion. He's from this area. You know, concerns about the weight, his health. If you're the Pelicans and we're talking contracts and everything and the future is Zion, what do you do with Zion Williamson if you're New Orleans right now?
Well, you got to re-sign him to a long-term big-dollar contract. I think that's going to be the benchmark no matter what. I think people sometimes want to give up on these guys, you know, because of an injured season or this, that, and the other. Don't forget, let's remember how patient Golden State and Boston were to get to this finals. They went through all sorts of injury issues with Klay Thompson and Golden State. And then for Boston, their patience came with, you know, all these Eastern Conference finals trips they could never quite get over the hump. Instead of trading their key pieces away or letting guys go in free agency, they kept the group together. I think that's the right message for New Orleans as well. You got to keep Zion in the fold. If you flash back to last season, he's an all-star starter. He's putting up gigantic numbers. You know, he's one of the most powerful forces in the entire NBA. Now, do you want to kind of build in some protections into that contract so if he continues to have some injury issues that, you know, you're not on the hook for all the money? Sure. But if you're the Pelicans, you're trying to build on the momentum from this season, which saw them make the playoffs and scare the Phoenix Suns a little bit in that first round. And you want Zion a part of it. And by the way, I was down there for game six, their last game of the season. Zion was out there on the court before the game, just itching. I mean, you could just tell he's kind of bouncing all over the place, wishing that he could play. So I think his hunger for the game remains strong, and I think he's going to be a big-time impact maker next season.
He's Ben Gallagher, covers the NBA for the Washington Post. Read his work there. Get to him on Twitter. He'll be all over the NBA Finals. He's out there to cover it in person tonight for Game 1. Ben, appreciate the time and the insight, and enjoy the NBA Finals.
It's my pleasure. Take care.
My pleasure's all ours. Ben Gallagher. Also wrote a book about that whole bubble experience titled Bubble Ball, which you can get online if you're interested. We had him on at the time when he was still on the 10-day quarantine in his hotel room. And to stay fit, he would just walk back and forth from the wall to the door to get his steps in. 10 days, I think it was 10 days, right? Isn't that what he said? Without being able to leave a hotel room when you first got there. We're going to think back on it, and I mean, man, what a different time when the pandemic first started. And just even trying to do a sports show without any sports. It was very interesting. I agree with Ben. I've already told you, right? Warriors in six. I've been saying that all week, even dating back to last week before we knew the Celtics were going to be the opponent. Where I disagree is he said nobody has more to gain or more to prove than Steph Curry. I disagree there. I gave you my list earlier. I put Steph Curry at number two. I still think it's Jason Tatum. Look, Curry's he has championships, and he won before Kevin Durant. He's won already without Kevin Durant. For Jason Tatum, this will be a first. And a chance to be a champion and a first-team All-NBA player before turning 25, not many guys have done that. Jordan didn't do it. LeBron didn't do it. Tatum will become a superstar. And there's only so many superstars you can have in the league at one time. I think Tatum would be elevated to that point. I've been hard on him this postseason. I think he's too inconsistent. I don't think he impacts the game enough in other ways other than scoring. But if he has a good series and they win the finals and they beat the Warriors and they do it potentially on the Warriors' floor, I mean, that'd be huge for Tatum. So I think Tatum's number one. I put Curry number two, especially if he gets an MVP this finals. That could shut up a lot of people. And then I say Ime Udoka is number three with the most to gain. Coach of the Celtics to try to win a championship in year one. That's only been done five other times since 1955. And oddly enough, it's been done more often in the past decade than ever before. I put Danny Ainge at number four, the most to gain, because this is still his team. I mean, they forced him out this past offseason, and now they go to the finals with the guys he brought in. And if he were to bring him a championship now after doing it 14 years ago, and doing it in a different way, right? Back then, it was just a super team. Let's bring in as much talent as we can with some veterans. This time, it was, let's trade away those veterans, get some draft picks, build through the draft, and boy, have they. So Danny Ainge, I think he has a lot to gain. I know Brad Stevens is running the show, but Danny could, hey, that was me. I traded and drafted for those guys. And then number five is Al Horford, because he won at the college level. He could win at the NBA level as well. I think he has the most to gain. Only one guy over the past 18 years has done both and has been an all-star as well. That's Anthony Davis. And only 32 players all time have won in college and the NBA, including Jordan, Jabbar, Russell, Magic Johnson. So Al Horford could join elite company. Somebody who won in college and now will have won in the NBA. Also, he's played more playoff games than anybody without ever playing in the finals. So he'll finally get his chance tonight. So I put him number five on my list. The five guys that I think have the most to gain this NBA finals. And it begins tonight. I think the Warriors win tonight. I think they win the series in six. We'll wrap up your Thursday when we come back. More Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers. Lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
On a funky finish here Thursday on the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. If you ever miss anything from the show, catch it on demand. Just search ESPN Radio Charleston however you listen to your podcasts, such as our breakdown last segment with Ben Golliver of the NBA Finals beginning tonight. And don't forget, you can take the Morrow Midday Show with you wherever you go. Just simply stream us online at charlestonsportsradio.com or through TuneIn Radio, your smart speaker, or a free app. Search ESPN Charleston in the App Store, and there you can listen to the show live or on demand from anywhere in the world. ESPN Charleston in the App Store. Download it today. Appreciate listeners checking in from at least 10 different states and multiple countries on this Thursday. Hey, before we go, we got to get to the most important news of the last about 24 hours. Johnny Depp, right, won the court case with Amber Heard. This is big. Big Johnny Depp guy. So now Depp gets, he was awarded $15 million, but in the state of Virginia, you can't go higher than whatever it is, $350,000 for one of the things. So long story short, he gets $10.3 million, but then Amber Heard got $2 million. So do the math. Essentially, Depp comes out on top over $8 million. And Amber Heard now, they believe that that's going to bankrupt her. That's more money than she has. But the way these things work, we talked about this a couple weeks ago in terms of like fraud. When you owe somebody so much money, these people, unfortunately, like, you never get that money. It takes them so long to ever pay that money back. I don't know if Johnny Depp will see or how much he will see of the $8 million he was awarded in court this week. But, of course, for him, most importantly, is just the reputation. The whole idea was that Depp felt like he lost out on roles. He was being blackballed because Amber Heard now apparently lied based off of this court case about Johnny Depp's abusive behavior. Trent, who do you think bounces back quicker? Will Smith or Johnny Depp? Who
Johnny
do you see?
Depp is going to be in the next. He's going to get a massive role in the next 6 months. I guarantee it. Will Smith, I don't know if we'll see him on screen for a couple years. Johnny Depp, he's going to be a guy revamping his career, Luke. Revamping.
I think so. We're all about second chances. Johnny Depp just had his name cleared. Always been a big Depp guy. Looking forward to hopefully Johnny Depp 2.0 coming out of this with new roles. In the meantime, if you ever miss anything from the show, catch on demand. Search ESPN Radio Charleston, however you listen to your podcast. Live is a series of hellos and goodbyes. For now, we say goodbye. We'll say hello again tomorrow at noon. More Midday Show on ESPN Radio.